The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for April 23rd, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Monte Carlo Masters. This week's podcast is brought to you by Health IQ as well as Top Notch Tennis Tours. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
It's good, man. Spring is finally in bloom here. After the ice storm last weekend, we finally have some decent weather here in Toronto, which is great. So it put me in the mood of the whole in the clay court season. I was feeling good. Watched Rafa Nadal triumph, absolutely trounce the field, winning his 11th title in the Principality, not losing his set, not having any set go more than, I believe, 6-4 throughout the entire event. I don't think he's, and if you include Davis Cup, where he destroyed Zverev and Cole Schreiber, he hasn't lost, I don't think any set has gone more than 6-4 this whole year so far. So he's feeling good. Very, very scary outlook for everybody. If this guy is in good shape, I don't care if he's turning 32 this month. I mean, we got a lot to talk about with this because it's an astounding figure. And it's an amazing thing that you said, Parsa. Let's just start with that, man. Actually, sorry, before we start with that, I just want to break down what we're looking at today. We're going to do the Monte Carlo review, which includes obviously a lot of different aspects and players. Then we're going to get into the GOAT debate revisited. I had posted something on Twitter, which got over 30 responses, so we want to talk about that a little bit. Then we'll break for a second, and then we'll get into Djokovic's performance and the new racket that he has. How is that going to aid him? He's also entered Barcelona this week, which we'll get into. And then subsequently, we'll get into the Barcelona and Stuttgart draws, which is an excellent event that they have for the WTA on the women's side in Germany this week. Okay, so Parsa, let's get right into it. You said something. I mean, you just said the thing that was the most important thing. It's 2018, April. It's going to be May next week, right?
Yeah.
Nadal, in 2005, won this tournament. You know, when he was young, the hair was flowing, he was wearing the sleeveless, and I think he was beating Correa in the finals way
the
back.
The Clam Diggers, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's wearing the capris and everything. Just it was just like, you know, and that's the back, you know, for everybody out there, those were the days when these Masters 1000s, the finals were 5 sets. You know, and they changed that because everybody was like, you know, we got to transition to the next week. Like, if these guys are playing best of five on Sunday, which, you know, Correa and Federer and Nadal did a couple times, you know, 2 days later, they got to start, you know, gearing it up again in Rome or Madrid or wherever they are, right? So they kind of made that a little bit easier for the top guys, especially because they were winning so much. And so anyways, but you're talking about a decade of dominance. And realistically, it's more than a decade of dominance because we're going from 2005 to 2018, and this guy is still winning this tournament. I believe he lost it 1 year to Djokovic. I think it was maybe 2013. And like, when is this going to end, right? That's what you were saying. And it's become such a predictable entity on tour. Now, for me, in a way, I like it because you're seeing something kind of like a Michael Jordan, because this is a surface-specific thing. Jordan was playing on hardwood all over the States. So, you know, different arenas, whatever he was doing his magic when he was in his heyday. You know, LeBron, all these other guys, Tom Brady. They're playing relatively on the same surface around the States. These guys go all around the world and they play on different surfaces. But when we see Rafa springtime on the clay, and this guy is just rolling. I mean, Parsa, this guy hasn't played a tournament since the Australian Open. That's another thing we should take into consideration. He walks in here, he beats, I think, a lot of people's, the odds favorite is Dominic Thiem as the second favorite to maybe win the French this year. He beat him 6-love, 6-2 in the quarters, right? I mean, Dimitrov, who's what, a top five player, you beat him, what was it, 6-3, 6-1. Then you got Kai Nishikori in the finals, right? Comes back, really nice to see him playing well this week. First set, Nishikori was, you know, jumping out of his shoes, smashing forehands everywhere, amazing down the line backhands. Serve looks better too. He fixed that hitch, that open backswing that he had. He's worked on that over the last 6-7 months when he was injured last year. Smoked him too. Second set was like a cakewalk. I think he was up 5, whatever. So let's break this down, because as glamorous and as exciting as this is for Nadal fans, and everybody's pumped again, if you're in Rafa's corner, is this boring for the tour? Is this become too predictable? Do we want to see more parity here when we get to the clay court season? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, first off, just going towards Rafa Nadal, I mean, you're seeing new patterns, new surface patterns.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the same guy that was flying around the court in 2005, but he's just different. He can flatten out balls now. He can change his court position. He comes forward. It's just, this guy's, there's no stopping him. The real question is he going to be, you know, getting to 15 Roland Garros titles? Is he going to get to 15 Monte Carlo? He's only 4 away. What's really going to stop him? The only barrier that he has is his health. And if he plays his schedule right, he could be healthy at this time of the year all the time, if he was smart about it, and if he wanted to. You know, the real question is it a little bit boring? Is it a little bit predictable? For me, I can tell you he's going to win. What do you want me to tell you? So is it good that you know, some guy is going to go and continue beyond a decade of dominance? You know, what's really the solution? I'd be curious to hear what anyone else has to say.
Yes.
Because you saw in the final there, Kei Nishikori gave him everything he could handle. He's sucking in air and just breathing and breathing and breathing. And there's nothing that can happen. How is Kei Nishikori, in a 2 out of 3, supposed to maintain that level, let alone a best of 5? And Nadal's sitting there just punishing him left and right, just, you know, and just breaking it down, going to the forehand, going to the backhand, going to the forehand, going to the backhand, just whipping him around the court. And then you think, okay, he's like, all right, you know, I'm going to lock in onto his backhand. And he just hits angle backhand winners. Then he hits backhand down the line winners from outside, you know, 5 feet to the right of the doubles alley. It's something that's just quite incredible. I'm not sure that there's any end in sight. Again, besides his own health, like I said, he was reliant on his speed and his predictable patterns of play. Now he's got less speed, but he's got completely unpredictable patterns of play. He's a tactical genius on the court. He knows exactly what to do, when to do it, why to do it. And now, not only that, but because of his hard court and grass court success, I think he's clearly learned how to flatten out certain balls, and he really can take it to someone and come forward too, which is just scary. So what are you supposed to do? So that's that. What I liked about Kei Nishikori and what I felt is a resurgence for him is his serve. He's clearly trying to mimic the Federer serve. His knee bend's a little greater than Federer's, but it looks pretty good. You know, he's got a serve that is definitely serviceable and can work him back into the top frame. And you know, I appreciated watching Monte Carlo. I missed it. I missed watching clay court tennis. I loved it. I love watching Rafa Nadal's dominance, but is it a little bit? You know, it's that age-old question of, you know, do you know the Titan is going to win, and do you enjoy watching the beatdown of the lesser people? And that's exactly what it is right now on the clay surface. Mm-hmm. Nadal is clearly the king, and everyone else is not going to touch him. It's not going to be this year, Nima. So unless he's injured or something like that, Rafa's going to win, you know, as much as he wants to win, put it that way.
You know, we had Ben Rothenberg, who's now joined the Tennis Connected team in terms of from a freelance perspective, and he wrote an article on Rafa, which I published, I believe, last Thursday, and he basically said that, you know, this is the time of year where Nadal's going to dominate, and there's nothing that anybody's going to be able to do about it. And it really is what it is, Farsa. I mean, because this guy comes in, like you said, Moya's really helped him in developing his serve patterns and, you know, just completely mixing it up. He's hitting that backhand so nicely down the lines in the corners. I mean, what are you really going to do? And it comes to a point where, you know, the fact that he's fresh now, and it's really nice when things, you know, work out for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, these guys, I think when, you know, he definitely wanted to play in Miami and Indian Wells because he's had success there, even though he's never won Miami. He's made the finals there on, I believe, 4 or 5 occasions. He's won Indian Wells 2 or 3 times. But you got to think, Parsa, that, you know, Moya was sitting there with him, and even Uncle Tony, because he's definitely still in the picture in the big way, even though he's not sitting in that box anymore on court. They were like, listen, man, don't forget, like, next month, it's that time of season where you've done pretty good. You know what I'm saying? And so just hold tight. You know, let's get down to, let's go do some fishing. Relax. Get that knee at 110 for now. And then just go full tilt, because he's going to go, I think he's probably playing Wednesday in Barcelona. He's going to have next week off to chill. He's still in Spain. He's going to feel that, you know, that vibe, that the good Spanish food. Get down to Madrid. Probably his least favorite of this swing, even though he won it last year. Probably going to win that too. And then does he win Rome, which is very suitable to him? Maybe he's a little bit gassed. We don't know. I think, like you said, the thing is that with even though Federer has struggled, he's never beat Rafa at the French, just because he's been playing so well this last couple of years and he's not there, Nadal's got to feel good about that, right? Because this guy's won 3 of the last 5 Grand Slams. And he's not even going to be there. He's told you already, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, when you kind of, you're going to this party and you don't want to see somebody, right? And they're, you know, 100% they're not going to be there. You're going to be more relaxed. And it's just, so it's the same sort of thing, right? Like, he knows better. You don't even have to worry about this guy until the grass. Djokovic still finding his way. We'll get to him in a bit. Murray, completely not out of the picture. Wawrinka is still not there. I thought he was going to play Monaco. He looks like he's going to be back in Madrid. So we're still not going to see him for a couple weeks. And even when he gets back, I mean, look, we don't, you know, he's going to be a little bit shaky. Who's it going to be? Team? Maybe. Can a little bit challenge him. From a physicality standpoint, you got to admit that Team is probably can stand, withstand. I don't know if he has the game, but I think he has the strength. I don't think Zverev can hang with him on 5 sets. No way. Dimitrov is definitely, I think, fit enough, but I don't think, again, he has the game to do it. And that's it. Nishikori's not going to be able to do it. Cilic is not going to be able to do it. So right now, you know, it is what it is, right? So do you have any closing words on Monte Carlo before we get into the GOAT debate?
Yeah, I only have one other closing word, to be honest with you. It's that... Just so everyone knows that this guy was beating people to a drub and then hitting the practice court. An hour later. I don't know.
That was amazing, eh? After he beat Dimitrov in the, because he missed some balls there, eh? Like, and then he won the match. He shook Dimitrov's hand, and then he did, actually, before he even shook Dimitrov's hand, he was walking to the net and he yelled at Moya and his trainer. He said, "Guys, go book a practice court right now." And he wanted one of the practice courts with no TV. Like, he didn't want anybody, and then he just wanted to hit forehands. And then I don't think they really got it, so he went on his phone after he did his on-court stuff, and he texted them and said, "Listen, guys, I'm going to see you guys on the practice court." And he just wanted to go out there, and then you saw what the difference was, right? He got out to a 3-0 lead against Nishikori. Nishikori came back. He's playing really well, and then just chipping away. And I think what's aiding, you made a great point. I think this Rafa, which, you know, 5-10 years ago, Nadal was just playing clay court tennis exclusively, spinning in the serve.
Relying on Uncle Tony, you know, to bark out stuff.
Yeah, and now he's kind of introduced a little bit of a hard court style onto the clay. And I think that's where Moya's effect, age, you know, like a little bit more racket technology, a little bit more string technology has helped develop that, because, you know, I've watched Nadal practice live on countless occasions, and he plays completely differently than he does when he plays matches. But now I think he's like, okay, you know what? Because he's a very smart guy, and he's realized, you know, this is what I need to do now, because he's the ultimate competitor. I mean, Parsa, let's just end with one thing. I don't care how like good this guy is, mentality-wise, you're never going to see another guy like this guy's. For you to win 11 Monte Carlo tournaments, and that's all you do in your career, you're probably going to be a Hall of Famer just based on that. But the mentality and the drive and the determination that's necessary for you to, like, he wants to win this tournament next year. He said it. He goes, "I'll see you guys next year." He's already looking forward to 2019, right? So how, like, this guy's hungry still, man. He wants to win these, and that's why he keeps doing it. But you know what I mean? He's not complacent. People become like, how many more of these do you need, man? You know what I'm saying? Like, but he's, he wants to win more. So for me, that's, you know, that's a very admirable sign and you know, trait that he has, which is fantastic. So Parson, moving on to the next thing. So on Twitter, I had posted something yesterday after the finals. And I said, you know, revisiting the, you know, the GOAT debate, I said, question of the day, can Federer still be the GOAT when Nadal is the greatest ever on clay? When Djokovic is perhaps is the key word here, the best to play on hard courts. Roger has a stake on grass, but Sampras was right there as well because I believe he won 7 titles. Are major titles the conclusive factor in determining who the GOAT is, essentially? And it, you know, got some deep, really good feedback on that. Got over 35 responses, and it ranged from "What are you smoking? Can I have some?" to, you know, like, you know, Djokovic is the best. He's had the most competition. Federer was beating guys like Baghdatis, and you know, all of these guys who were not very noteworthy at the time. Gonzalez in the finals of majors. Djokovic, you know, has defeated much harder rivals in the finals a handful of times, with Nadal and Federer being in there. Then you have, you know, Federer most weeks at number one, you know, best grass court player, has 20 majors. Then you have Rafa, the best clay courter ever. He's still going. I think for me, the best comment somebody made was, we got to really revisit this when they've all retired. And which makes sense. And another important factor is that Federer realistically is probably going to hang it up within the next couple of years. And Djokovic and, you know, Rafa still probably have 3 or 4 more years. So they're going to keep going and they can catch up. And if, you know, Djokovic can refine his form, guy's only 30, 31 years old soon. Then you got, you know, Rafa can, I mean, on clay, who's good, like this time next year, who's going to be a stand? Like, it's not going to happen. He's definitely favored to win next year too, as of this second. So for me, the only thing I can say here, Parsa, is, and one other person made a great comment. Theoretically, if somebody is the GOAT, right, because it is what it is, tennis is such an all-surface sport, right? So when you have, if Federer is not the greatest ever on clay being such a big part of tennis, then how can he be the GOAT? Even, he's won the French. You got to say that Nadal was not in that tournament in the sense of playing him, because Soderling took him out, and then Federer took out Soderling. I mean, is Federer the best grass court player ever? Probably say he's right there with Sampras. Is he the best hard court player ever? Well, you could say he's absolutely right there with Djokovic. Is he the best clay court player ever? Absolutely not. But is he the best overall player, in the sense of he's been number one for the most weeks, and he has the most majors? Yes.
And you could argue at Roland Garros that he was running into the king of clay, greatest clay court player of all time, in every final.
Yeah, and people are saying, well, if Nadal wasn't there, Federer would probably have 2 or 3 Roland Garros titles, 4. I 100% agree with you. But if Federer wasn't there, how many Grand Slams would Nadal have? If there's essentially 2 majors on hard courts, with, you know, the Australian Open being a variation of it, but imagine there was 2 Grand Slams on clay, right? Imagine there was 2 Grand Slams on grass. I mean, all of these things you can put into the equation, but it is what it is. We got to deal with the factors that are presented to us today. And I think when you say that, and if you think about it as an overall, I can't say that. Yes, they're all goats in one way.
They're all goats.
They're all goats. But you
it's
cannot.
A herd of goats.
Yeah, there's a herd of goats, and you can't say that that Federer is the GOAT, because he's not the best clay court player ever. You know, I mean, Nadal is. Nadal's the best GOAT on clay, without a shadow of a doubt. I don't think anybody even comes close to him. Borg, Vilas, even though those guys were amazing, I mean, this guy is, you know, he's completely surpassed all of those guys. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that overall? Like, what do you think about when you talk about it, all of the variables that I presented with Nadal, Fed, Djokovic, Laver, Borg, let's throw in maybe even
Sampras,
definitely. Emerson, McEnroe, Agassiz, all Connors, all of these guys, they've all done tremendous things, different things. You know, Fed, obviously, he also has not won a gold medal at the Olympics. I know he did in doubles, but he hasn't in singles. Probably won't do that because I think 2020 is Tokyo, right? That's still a couple years away. Does he even get to that point?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's going to want to do it. So, yeah, I mean, so that's basically what it is. And then yeah, I'm going to throw in one last thing.
Nima,
yeah.
Is an endless debate. It can go on and on and on. It depends on who you favor and what statistics you look at. For me, they are all goats. It's clear that Nadal is the goat on clay as we're in this season. There's just no doubt about it. And just to marvel at what Federer has done, being 4 years older than these guys,
more than four,
or five.
Five
years older than these guys. It's quite remarkable. And so we'll see where these guys are all at. I mean, I definitely agree that you sort of have to take the debate when everyone's done. But at the same time, you have something where there's one person with more of something. And it just depends on what statistics are valued. If it's number of slams, number of weeks at number one, then you have a clear-cut winner. If it's a variety of different style of surfaces and everything, I remember for a long time, Sampras was racking up slams, and it was very celebrated that Agassi was the second player ever to win on four different surfaces. You know, and that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And then these guys come along, and it's just not a big deal at all because everyone and their mother does it now. So it becomes this endless debate of what is. There's one thing that's for certain, that Federer has raised the bar of tennis in the last 10, 15 years to a stratospheric level that it hasn't seen before. If the McEnroe, Borg, those guys, Lendl, Wielander, and these guys brought it up to one level, Federer has destroyed that level and brought it to just a completely, totally different animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see and be a part of. And it has made it so difficult. What it used to be, you have a forehand weapon and you could be and maybe a serve, and you could be the greatest of all time. Now you have to do everything. You got to volley. You got to hit. Not only that, you have to keep improving. From 25 to 35, you have to continue to evolve your game. And it's just quite remarkable. And I know I'm getting off topic with the GOAT debate, but that's why. They're all GOATs, man. I don't know. I can't. How am I supposed to pick one over the other when they're all remarkable in their own right? And, is it true that Djokovic had the hardest competition? I really believe that to be true. Is it true that Nadal is dominant on a single surface and can arguably say that he dominated in a head-to-head with Federer? I think so. Although that number has changed recently. And is it safe to say that Federer's longevity and the number of slams on a variety of surfaces and his was the second best clay court in the world for many years? Is it fair to say that he's the king of the hill? I think you need a Mount Rushmore. That's basically it. You got to put Federer's face and Nadal's face, and Djokovic a little bit lower just because I think his recent struggles. These guys, Federer and Nadal, haven't gone through the same struggles that Djokovic has gone through. Perhaps it's injury related. Who knows? But those guys had plenty of opportunity to fall by the wayside, and each time they've responded with a championship pedigree that we've come to appreciate and enjoy. And I think Djokovic can do it too. It's just taking him a little bit longer, and it's a little bit delayed. So the GOAT debate lives on. It's not going to end on today's podcast, and we're going to keep talking about this.
Yeah, and I think that for me, just to sum it up, when you look at the GOAT, and I think that the GOAT should be able, if it's a real GOAT, should be able to dominate on every surface. I think that's a very important factor that a lot of people do have a good point for. And the fact that, Federer never defeated Nadal at the French, was even though he was in the finals and he's an amazing clay court player in his own right, definitely is something that we have to always remember. And Nadal did beat Federer at Wimbledon in that classic in 2008, which will probably go down as one of the best tennis matches ever. But, I mean, it is what it is. And these guys were just happy and lucky to have all of these guys along. And we'll see how this evolves now because, you know, I think this year we're going to be able to put, forth some more accolades for all of these guys. Wimbledon's coming up. You know, Fed's going to be the favorite there. French is coming up. You know that Nadal's going to be the favorite there. And then the U.S. Open is the wild card for me this year because a guy like Del Potro, he could definitely win that tournament. A guy like maybe Zverev can, not resurrect, but get his level up to where it needs to be. You got a guy like Cilic who could do some damage there. Isner maybe can do something. And then you got Djokovic who's coming back. Murray's going to be there. So there's going to be all of those factors. So we'll see how it transpires. Okay, Parcel, so moving along to the second half of our podcast, which is brought to you by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including tennis players, runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. From a tennis perspective, according to a 2007 study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, tennis players who play twice a week have 17% lower body fat than the age match controls. According to a 1980 study in the Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, average VO2 max is 40% higher for male tennis players and 32% higher for females. As you can clearly see, there are a lot of health benefits to playing tennis. From a savings standpoint, 56% of Health IQ customers have saved between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/TC or mention the promo code TC when you talk to a Health IQ agent at the following 1-800-549-1664 number. Okay, Parsa, so getting on to the second half of our show before we wrap it up and get ready for Madrid in a couple weeks, let's talk quickly about Djokovic now and his overall performance in Monaco. I mean, this is a tournament where he's very comfortable as former champion, which he beat Nadal in as well. He lives there. He's got a vegan restaurant there, so he's there all the time. The conditions are very, you know, second nature to him. Thought he played, had a decent event. You know what I mean? Like, he played all right. He bowed out, I believe, in the third round to Thiem. Beat a couple guys. What did you think of his performance? I mean, did you see anything that was encouraging on, you know, on his standpoint as he now moves forward into the clay court season? And it's very notable to add that he's also entered Barcelona this week, which started today, this morning. You know, how's that going to all work out for him? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a little uptick in his level of play. I felt like he was starting to physically hit the ball a little bit better. He noticeably has gone back on his serve and, you know, away from the abbreviated motion, which I think helps. As you noted last week, you know, you were very worried about that abbreviated motion. It seemed to have paid off a little bit of, for him. You know, at the same time, I felt like he was almost trying to lose sometimes. He's still displaying some self-doubt in the end result of his tennis. You know, when he was at the top of his game, he was like bulletproof. You couldn't break him down to save your life. Right now, he's showing some signs of being bulletproof, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he sort of gives in and starts to make some errors and just does things that make you scratch your head. And you could see him fighting himself, you know. So, you know, you're witnessing him exercising his demons and trying to get them out. And I think he'll do it because I think he's done it before, and he's got the pedigree to do it. As long as the ball striking and the movement is there, which I think is what we started to see in Monte Carlo, a little bit of confidence, a little bit of rolling, and I think good things will happen for him. Is he going to beat Nadal right now? No. Because Nadal's just rock solid like that. But he certainly will have the belief that he could do so. And, you know, it's just, he's definitely showing more glimpses than he did just a week or two ago. You know, just similar to Nishikori when he was coming back from his injury. I mean, he was losing in challenger first rounds in the United States, and now he's, you know, got to the final Monte Carlo. It took some time. It's a process. And I think Djokovic is going to go through his own. And, you know, I think he'll get back.
Yeah, and I think for me, there's a couple things. I mean, he's, going back and forth. There's a lot, so many changes, right? Like he's going from his serve technique to, partially he's also introduced a new racket, which we just found out a couple of days ago. Heads made them a new mold where he went away from, I believe, an 18 by 20 string pattern. Now he's got an 18 by 19. That's going to give him a bit more spin. You know what I mean? It's not as dense as a string pattern. And then as well with that, I think it's a little bit more head light, which I think is going to help alleviate some of the stress on his wrist and his arm. And then, I mean, he's got, new his coach back, Marion Vida. I don't know, man. There's so many changes. You know how when Fed introduced his new frame, he didn't come out, firing away. I mean, this takes some time to, these guys, are used to stuff. Like Murray's been using the same racket, just painted over for the last 20 years. Nadal's made a couple minor adjustments, but these are not, these are big changes for players of this caliber that have won, multiple Grand Slams with these type of, this type of equipment. So I think that it's going to be, for me, it's going to be interesting. For him to play in Barcelona this week, it was great because that means that he's serious and he's not taking a couple more weeks off to get ready for Madrid. And then he's got final points to defend in Rome. So that for me is going to be, telling sign because he's going to lose a lot of points. He's going to lose a lot of ranking positions. He could drop down to, close to 20 if he doesn't do well in Rome. So we'll see how he does this week. You made a good point, which we're going to get into right now. Barcelona draw, which started today, big event, 500 in Spain. Nadal number one seed. He's going to probably get out there on Wednesday. But Parsa, what did you say that the name of the center court is? Pista Rafa Nadal.
That's right. It's insane. I don't even understand it. You're going to have to beat Nadal on clay, which is already, we've been talking about the whole podcast, that it's
Yeah.
impossible. And then now you're going to have to beat him on a court that's named after him. I mean, that's just not fair.
It's too much Rafa Nadal everywhere,
It's just too
right?
much. It's like, all right, you're going to play Rafa Nadal on Rafa Nadal court. Oh boy.
In his home country.
In his home country,
Yeah.
near his hometown.
Yeah.
It's just great. It's just too
Yeah.
much.
And that's gonna, they're gonna put that, hopefully it happens. I mean, they both actually have, I know you're gonna laugh at me and stuff like that, but the draws are, Nadal's gonna smoke through. Just quickly, we're not gonna get into a draw preview here for this, but he's got Nishikori in his quarter, Feliciano Lopez, as well as Djokovic. So that could probably be a Friday affair. Probably put that as the last match on Friday. Very, very cool. I mean, for an off week, which we don't have, like a Masters 1000 or a major, relatively, this is an excellent draw. We also got Thiem in this, Goffin, Verdasco, Dimitrov, who made the semis last week. So it looks promising, and I think that it's going to be another week, great conditions, great weather, very reminiscent to the clay that you're going to be seeing at Roland Garros. And then just, realistically, another week for Nadal to shine here. Now, my question is, Parsa, an interesting dynamic about this draw is Djokovic, he had the opportunity to sign up for Budapest as well too, which is a 250 going on concurrently this week with Barcelona, right? He could have went there, avoided a lot of these big guys, maybe even won the tournament, realistically. But he didn't do that. He knows that Nadal is going to be here. To me, those are fighting words. He's like, I want to face you, man. You know what I'm saying? And lo and behold, he's in his quarter, and they both only got to win a couple of matches, right? To me, what message does that sound? You know what I mean? To me, that sounds like this guy wants to play Nadal on Rafa's court in front of his hometown fans. And so to me, that's a good sign for Djokovic. Do you think in any way, shape, or form, before we get into the Stuttgart draw, Rafa is worried about facing Djokovic on a clay court right now?
I mean, I think the respect is definitely there. I think
Yes.
Rafa's worried about the 500th guy in the world, let alone Djokovic.
Yeah,
So,
of course, of course.
but he's gonna blaze whoever's in his path. I mean, that's ultimate. I try not to read into things where he could have entered this one or that one. Barca is a 500, right?
Yeah, Barca is 500, yeah. Big time.
So, I think that's partially probably the reasoning in that while Djokovic is doing that, he's trying to get the points also. necessary to get the highest seeding, to get out of Djokovic's, out of Nadal's way, out of Federer's way, for as long as possible. So I think there's a couple things going on besides maybe some sort of message, although I don't know if Djokovic is in the mode of sending messages at this moment. You know, if he had been winning and got to the finals of Indian Wells or Miami, and then he goes to Monte Carlo and has a deep run there, you know, then maybe he's like, I'm coming after you, you know, on your home surface. You know, he won a couple matches, one against a countryman, a second one that was pretty, you know, was okay. And then, you know, he lost the team. So we still don't know that much about Djokovic. We're all hopeful. We see a little bit of an improvement, but who knows?
You know, Parsa, before, I just want to, you just mentioned Dominic Thiem, and actually there's a point that I wanted to talk about. This guy, as good of a clay court player that he is, and I have a lot of respect for him, his work ethic, and he grinds and all of these things, is very, you know, admirable stuff. He defensively is a very, very poor clay court player. He has zero defense on clay. I mean, the guy's, he's out wide trying to hit a flat bat. You know what I mean? Like, just...
Yeah, I mean, he goes for it.
Yeah, he goes for everything. And his margin for error is not that good on a clay court. I don't know if it's because he was coming back, but in Monaco, I felt that he had a very poor margin for error. I mean, you look at Nadal, still mixing in different heights with some flats and stuff like that, but this guy was not doing that at all. And I don't know if that's something new that I just noticed, but for me, not good signs for him. So hopefully, maybe he's going to, I hope he's going to work on that for this week. So Parson, now we're going to get into, before we're done for this week, the Stuttgart draw, which is an excellent, I would call this like a boutique tournament, indoor clay in Germany. The top of the top eight seeds, they're all top 10 players. Then on top of that, so you have Maria Sharapova in the draw, who's unseeded. Okay.
Wild
card. You have Kerber, unseeded. I mean, this is, and there's only 28 players in this field, which is, I mean, because everybody, the top four seeds get a bye. So it's 32 draw, but the top four get a draw, bye, so it's only 28 players in essence. I mean, this is, you got Caroline Garcia and Maria Sharapova facing off in the first round. You have Madison Keys, unseeded, again. I mean, this is a U.S. Open finalist, right? Versus Pavlyuchenkova in the first round. You have Kiki Mogdanovic there. You have, I mean, this is, you know, you have Kvitova versus Kerber in the first round. This is going to be a good one. And I think this is going to be a nice segue to really kick off the women's field, because, you know, they kind of started a little bit later. I kind of always wish that Monte Carlo was a dual event, but it doesn't look like that's going to be happening anytime soon. So, you know, kudos to the WTA for running. I think this is one of the most successful one-week events that they have during the calendar.
And always very well played, you know?
Very well attended. Yeah, super well. I mean, everybody wants that Porsche, right? At the end of the week. And
I do.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I think some of the headlines that I'm going to be looking for here is, again, does Halep back up her number one ranking? Because she's still got a lot to prove. She still needs a major, right? And, you know, she's got Kazakina in the... I mean, this is some good players. I don't know if she's getting... Like, anybody can win this tournament. Like, Coco Vandeweghe is playing Sloane Stephens first round. There's some stuff... And for me, Maria Sharapova is still this kind of cloud over her, right, Parsa? I mean, let's end with her, realistically. Like, what's... You know, I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, but she's always working hard in terms of all of her off-court stuff that she has, because... She's such a conglomerate, but, you know, she still works. She's still very much invested in her tennis.
Yep.
But are the results coming? You know what I mean? Not necessarily. I don't think it's gone to, the script hasn't really unfolded the way that she would have wanted it to, right? But nevertheless, she's still there. This is a tournament that she very much likes. Porsche is one of her major sponsors, along with Kerber. So you know that those two will be here. But what do you think about her and, you know, the dynamic for her and how she's, you know, going to be going forward here?
I think she's like, it's a case of her losing her ranking. So her seeding isn't where it is. I think she strikes so well and is experienced enough to beat players that are ranked lower than her most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But right now she doesn't have that ranking. And so she runs into players that are either in form or seasoned or whatever it is, and starts hasn't gathered the points yet. But I think over time she will.
Yeah.
Is she going to win a slam? I don't think so. I don't think she was going to win a slam before she got suspended. So she was already slowing down. But her ball striking is pure, and she's a great fighter, and I think she's a perennial top 10 player. But you know, she needs the results to back that up, and I think over time she will. But that's what we have. We have an aging superstar who's done a lot for tennis and you know, for herself, and whether those supplements she was taking or that pill she was taking was performance enhancing or not. I mean, I'm not a doctor or physician to tell you that. You know, she's definitely just a little shade of what she was in the past. And, you know, who knows where she's going to end up. But I do think just her ball striking alone will get her in the top 10 and her competitiveness. And from there, I'm not quite sure she can get much further than that. There's a good crop of depth at the WTA level. As long as Serena or somebody is not dominant, which there is no dominant number one,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of very, very, very good players on the tour right now. And anyone can win at any given time, depending on who's feeling good that week. And I don't think, however, let me put it this way. I don't think Sharapova is one of those. So if there's 10 players that on any given week or 12 players on any given week that can go and win a slam, I do not think that Sharapova is in that conversation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Which bodes the ultimate question, right? You know, this is the most successful women's player ever. I haven't finished yet. From a financial standpoint,
okay.
Right? And she's got more money than she knows what to do with. And I don't think that's going to stop after her tennis, because she's got her hand in so many different things. It's not for the money. You know, it's just because of the love of the game.
And she clearly loves to play.
Yeah,
she
always
has.
Yeah, and how long do you keep going, right, at this stage? Like, you know, at some point she's probably going to want to have a family, get into some other endeavors, probably hotels, do some, you know, the brand is very strong, very worldwide, transcended tennis without a shadow of a doubt, without a question. That's going to be interesting for me. I mean, and I think that you mentioned, you know, Serena Williams, right? Like, what is she up to? I know that, again, she's kind of getting now into more of the fashion tip. She's putting up all this stuff on Instagram. I think she wants to get more into that. But she's definitely coming back and working hard. Looks like, as of the moment, she's going to be playing Madrid, Rome, and Paris. Let's see how she does. I mean, these are all a lot of interesting things can happen, because I think, as we very strongly alluded to, the men's side is a foregone conclusion until we get onto the grass. And we'll see what Federer has to give us. We know what's going to happen there. But women's...
we have no idea.
30 different women can win the French Open. And so that's the beauty of it all. So that's kind of the dynamic that we're going to be investigating as we, you know, grind through this clay court calendar and we move forward. So I think, you know, Parson, that's pretty much it for this week. For everybody out there, Parson and I will be back in a couple weeks to preview the Madrid Masters from Spain, which has, obviously, as everybody knows, both a men's and a women's draw. So, Parsa, thank you very much for joining us this weekend for your insight.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. In the meantime, make sure to follow Parsa on Twitter as well as on Instagram. He's got some great stuff for you there, as well as myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on all the social media platforms. Please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes as well as leave a review. We would greatly appreciate that. And look out for some great content coming on tennisconnected.com. Again, thanks everybody out there for listening. Be good. Enjoy the tennis this week. And we'll see you in the comments.